It's ironic that we know more about the surface of Mars than we do about what goes on in our own planet's oceans. But here's a man who's on a mission to change all that with a fleet of aquatic robots that can go where we can't.
My name is Jules Jaffe, and I'm a scientist, research oceanographer here at the Scripps Institution of Oceanography. Over the past decade, we've developed a rather large vehicle, something on the order of a Volkswagen Beetle-sized vehicle, which has the capability of adjusting its buoyancy. And on it, we put a laser and we put some very sensitive cameras, and we can put that off the ship. It weighs almost a ton. So it's hardly something you could go out on your rowboat and put in the water. We need a fairly large ship. And we've learned a lot of interesting things. But the problem we've kept coming up against with this, and it becomes more and more obvious, the more we process our data and the more we think about it, is that we're just sampling one place at one time. And even though we get a nice picture from that place and time, and there are inferences we can make, we're starting to work on distributed sensor networks, where instead of having just one sampler in one place at one time, we've got sort of a small army of these things, and they're all going up and down in the water, and they're all sampling, and they're all sampling different places at different times. And if we know where they are, and we know when they're there, and we have the appropriate sensors on them, we can start to reconstruct this three-dimensional distribution of these organisms and actually look at mechanism as opposed to just looking at more or less existence.
How do you get them to talk to each other? Because a major problem with underwater communication, as submariners know very well, you can't get radio signals through water terribly easily. So how do you keep them in touch with each other?
Well, the ocean, as you've already highlighted, is particularly opaque to electromagnetic radiation. But acoustics, on the other hand, as has been known by animals that have evolved over hundreds of millions of years, can in fact go far. And so our plan is to have these vehicles localizing each other acoustically. And of course, we can communicate with one of them that is fairly close to us, and then they can distribute that message among the entire group. By relaying this information, we think we can evolve sensor systems which can sense tens of kilometers instead of maybe just hundreds of meters.
Would they be carried by ocean currents? You deploy a sort of array of these things over a certain distance and then let the natural current move them along.
Precisely. And you've actually had a wonderful insight into one of the advantages of our technology is that we would like to be in the frame of reference of the organism itself. So when you're sitting up on a ship and the thing's bobbing up and down and you stick something in the water, that thing's going to be moving around. So we found out a long time ago that it makes more sense to put the vehicle in the water and let it sort of go with the flow, as we say, and to have maybe tens or even 100 of these things going with the flow allows us not only to take a snapshot of their evolving environment, but also to track them. And there are many enigmas in oceanography which we don't understand, having to do with small animals that, say, are born on shore, and they have a pelagic part of their life where they go out to sea, maybe for 3 months, little baby barnacle or something like that. And somehow they get back. And to be honest, I don't have an idea how they do that. And most of the people I know who study these things don't have an idea how they do that. So we can not only study this sort of 10-kilometer area, but we can watch it evolve and be sort of transported in time and maybe start to unravel some of these riddles of how organisms survive in the ocean.
This presumably is what you're actually building at the moment. Is that going to be one of these vehicles?
That's correct. So what we're looking at here, Chris, is something on the size of a soccer ball, which has been cut in half, and we're looking inside at the electronics of this device.
It looks like something that should be in Star Wars, actually. But
there's a good story about that, actually, because in our last grant proposal to the National Science Foundation, we wanted to present a color graphic of these devices. And my colleague actually took the Death Star and shrunk it down, and he created a picture where he had about 20 of these Death Stars communicating with each other. So, in fact, we're not that far away.
But is that the right message to be sending out, because you're actually trying to save the Earth?
Yeah,
destroy
that's
it.
Correct.
But how does it work?
Okay, so basically what we have here is a pretty simple thing. It's a soccer ball with a bunch of electronics inside of it, and the soccer ball is thick enough so that we can send it down to about 80 meters of depth without imploding. And the computer has sensors that tell it what the depth of the vehicle is. So by adjusting its buoyancy, its volume, in the ocean, we can actually send it down and keep it at a certain depth in the sea. And what we also have on this vehicle, on the bottom here, is an acoustic transmitter and a receiver. We call that a transducer. And it can send sound and receive sound. And these are actually modems. So they're actually communicating devices, which allows these vehicles to talk to each other, and they can actually range off of each other. So that allows us, knowing their depth and knowing how far they are from each other, to estimate their three-dimensional positions. So now imagine a fleet of maybe 100 of these things slowly descending in the sea, localizing off each other, each equipped with some method of sensing plankton density or perhaps other things like zooplankton using acoustics. And using this 100 or so samples, time-varying samples, we can now create a three-dimensional time-varying record of the evolution of, say, a volume that might be more like 5 kilometers by 5 kilometers by this 80-meter deep, it's not a cube, but this volume.
How long does it take you to develop something like this, from concept to getting something that you can put into the Pacific out there?
Well, you've touched a very tender subject with me. So you might have noticed I have sort of a bit of comedy associated with my personality. So what I tell my students is that if you're pregnant, you're guaranteed in 9 months. But if you're an engineer and you're building a vehicle, it could be 10 years. And so we're sort of giving birth. In fact, this has been an exciting week for us because 10 years from the inception of this, we've now started to test these things in the ocean with the modem communication. And it's really exciting. But by the time I tell our students that science is not something if you want immediate gratification, because the time you think of a thing, write the proposal, perhaps get it rejected a few times before it's funded, do the research, get the results, process the data, publish it, and go to colleagues and tell them what you've done, it can often be sort of a 7 to 10 year period.
It's comforting to know that even high-powered scientists like Star Wars 2. That was underwater robot designer Jules Jaffe from the Scripps Institute at the University of California at San Diego.